Hey everyone, before we get started, I just wanted to take a moment to thank everyone for listening. Of course, all you iTunes and Podbean listeners, those of you who've been there from the beginning or who have found the podcast somewhere along the way. And of course, now all of you on YouTube who are listening or watching, as the case may be. Slowly but surely, the number of subscriptions and video views are starting to accumulate. We just recently broke the 1,000 view mark on YouTube, and I know that's just a pittance by YouTube standards. That 1,000 views really isn't much, but still exciting for me at least. And I want to thank all of you for choosing to view the YouTube versions of the podcast episodes. And I especially want to thank those of you who took the extra step to subscribe. And also I wanted to quickly thank and apologize to a listener who tried to get a hold of me via the Week in Doubt Facebook page. It's become almost mechanical. At the end of every episode, I remind people they can like the show on Facebook, but it's been such a while since I've seen any real activity that I think I may have gotten a little dejected and just stopped checking in. Then recently, this week, I decided to check on the Facebook page, and I found that someone tried to get in touch with me about 20 days ago. They left a very thoughtful and eloquent message, basically letting me know they appreciated the podcast. And I guess they're a web programmer located in Europe, and they had even offered to dedicate some of their services, which was very thoughtful and generous. And I wanted to thank you by name, or at least by addressing you by your handle. But I went back, and I can't find any messages now. I went to the Week in Doubt Facebook page, clicked on messages, and the message is gone. But I did send you a reply, and I apologize once again for not discovering your message sooner. If you're out there, I'm sure you know who you are if you're still listening. And as far as the services go, I just kind of half-jokingly said maybe I'll have to badger the person for advice somewhere down the line, because right now I use Podbean to host my podcast feed, and as the number of episodes accumulates, you know, I keep running out of space. So I think it started out, I was paying like, you know, roughly $5 to store the current and archived episodes of the podcast. Then I ran out of room, so now I'm up to about $9.95 a month to Podbean. So I said sometime down the road, I may actually try to host the feed myself. And in that regard, I'm not that tech savvy. So maybe I will hit you up for advice about that at some point. And that might be an interesting fact for those of you who are maybe thinking about doing your own podcast or just wondering how a podcast works. You don't upload your podcast episodes directly to iTunes. You need a middleman. You need a place where you can host your feed. Then you basically submit your podcast for approval to iTunes, and if they approve you, as they obviously did in my case, then you just give them your feed, and iTunes automatically updates your podcast as new episodes come in via the feed that you host elsewhere. But anyway, enough of that, and now on to the show. Hi everyone, this is Philip Anthony Albertelli, and welcome once again to The Week in Doubt, a podcast for atheists, agnostics, and whoever, and this is episode 28. All right, so I want to jump right into a news story this week, and this is a kind of rare one for the show, because it has to do with the subject of priests and sexual abuse. Something I haven't really touched on much during the course of the show. I think the closest I've come is when I have made references about fundamentalist Mormon sex and polygamy, especially polygamy that involves the marrying off of underage girls to lecherous old men, I guess. But I haven't commented much on any of the Catholic sex abuse scandals. And that's not because I was raised Catholic and I have some bias or something like that. Not at all. I think it has more to do with the fact that from the get-go, this podcast, even though it's aimed mainly at a atheist and agnostic demographic, the point of this show hasn't been to demonize religion or to pin the bad actions of certain religious adherents on religion as a whole. As I've stated numerous times, it's not really my aim or my desire to tear down religion or to wag a finger at the social ills associated with religion. For the most part, my aim with this podcast is just trying to get at the truth. As someone who's been wrestling with the big issues since childhood, is there a God? Is there an afterlife? Someone who still wants to know the answers to those big questions. This show is about trying to analyze religion and the supernatural claims of religion, trying to see if there's any validity to those claims. And as you know, if you've been listening to the show, I usually come to a conclusion that no, there isn't any evidence for the supernatural or anything like that. And essentially, religion's a man-made. But the reason why the story I'm going to talk about caught my attention and why I'm going to talk about the subject of the Catholic Church and sex abuse scandals is because the figure at the heart of this news story is someone that I used to watch a lot on TV. His name is Father Benedict Groeschel, and he himself isn't accused of anything. The story is more about his controversial comments, recent comments he made about priests and sex abuse. And his comments do come off as somewhat callous and disturbing. And you might be wondering, well, if I'm a non-believer, why was I watching this guy on TV? And it's kind of a funny story. As I've said a lot on the show, even though I am a non-believer and I've had serious doubts about religion, God, the afterlife, and things like that since a young age, I've also always been fascinated by religion. And I think even though I'm not a believer, I was raised Catholic, and I still get some comfort out of studying religion or watching religious documentaries and stuff like that. Even if I'm not a believer, it still interests me, and there is something I find comforting about listening to people talk about religion or studying religion. But anyway, so back in my 20s, when I'd usually stumble through the door at the end of the night after a night out partying or whatever, I would go into the living room, and it'd probably usually be something like 2 a.m. or something, and I would watch EWTN, which is the Eternal Word Television Network, if I remember correctly. And I would watch, it's so weird if you try to picture it. Here I am, you know, this young guy, inebriated, head still all aglow from out doing whatever it was I was doing, and a non-believer to boot. And here I am in the wee hours of the morning watching Mother Angelica, Raymond Arroyo, and this guy who's at the heart of the story, Father Benedict Groeschel. And I always liked Father Benedict Groeschel. I thought he kind of looked like a medieval painting of Saint Anthony come to life. You know, he was this old friar, complete with the gray robe and hood and long white beard. And I just used to like listening to him wax philosophical about the lives of the saints and things like that. And I also remember there used to be this show on G.K. Chesterton that they always would do. And they had actually a G.K. Chesterton impersonator, quoting Chesterton and whatnot. And I'm definitely glad I watched that show in particular, because as it would turn out, knowledge about Chesterton would come in handy, because when you watch debates between atheists and Christian apologists, Christians will often end up quoting Chesterton. So I'm actually glad that I learned a little something about him back in the day while watching TV in the middle of the night, half in the bag. But or not just half in the bag, probably all in the bag. But I don't think that's a saying. But anyway, so imagine my surprise when I was browsing the HuffPost religion and I came across a story about Father Benedict Groeschel. So I'll read perhaps the first few paragraphs. Father Benedict Groeschel, American friar, claims teens seduce priests in some sex abuse cases. And this is a story by Meredith Bennett Smith, and it was posted on August 29th. In a recent interview with the National Catholic Register, Father Benedict Groeschel of the Conservative Franciscan Friars of the Renewal said that teens act as seducers in some sexual abuse cases. It's been close to a decade since an investigation into clergy sex abuse cases by the Boston Globe unearthed a shocking scandal and cover-up that rocked the foundation of the Catholic Church in the U.S. and around the world. 10 years may have passed, but the wounds have yet to fully heal in America, especially in light of the recent Penn State allegations, as well as the trial of Monsignor William Lynn, former secretary for the clergy in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. In light of this, the recent comments by Groeschel seem both puzzling and jarringly out of step with current sentiment. In an interview with the National Catholic Register posted this week, Groeschel was asked about his work with the very conservative Friars of the Renewal, a breakaway order he founded 25 years ago. The conversation took an interesting turn, however, when the editor asked about the 78-year-old's work with sexual abuse perpetrators. And here in quotes is Groeschel's own words. "People have this picture in their minds of a person planning to a psychopath," Groeschel said, "but that's not the case. Suppose you have a man having a nervous breakdown and a youngster comes after him. A lot of the cases, the youngster, 14, 16, 18, is the seducer." Then Groeschel was pressed for clarification. And he went on to say, and I'm quoting the reporter, "Furthermore, Groeschel expressed a belief that most of these relationships are heterosexual in nature, and that historically sexual relationships between men and boys have not been thought of as crimes." Well, this is wacky stuff on a number of levels. I mean, I'm trying to think where to begin. The idea that the kids are seducing the priests sounds very ignorant and archaic. It almost sounds like that old barbaric idea that a woman's asking for it if she's wearing a short skirt or dressed provocatively. This seems like some really kind of ignorant, archaic thinking here on Groeschel's part. And then to go on to say that the relationships are heterosexual in nature, I don't actually get that. I don't know what he's saying. So he's saying if a boy seduces a priest, and I don't even know how that would work. First of all, I imagine the most of these boys, I mean, I don't know what their sexual preferences tend to be on average. Not that that should even matter, whether or not, I mean, if let's say we just buy into this Twilight Zone scenario that the kid is trying to seduce the priest. The priest is an adult. And being a priest, we'd hope he'd have some kind of moral compass, or just being a human being, he'd have a moral compass. It's his job as the adult to put the kibosh on the situation, as it were. And if it's a straight kid who's usually daydreaming about girls or football, I doubt he's going to be trying to seduce a male priest. And even if it was a troubled young gay kid, I mean, first of all, just because he's a gay kid doesn't mean he's going to try to seduce a priest. And even if he did, theoretically, like I said, it's the priest's job to quash the situation. Then I don't get how, on the one hand, he's talking about how it is a sexual relationship. The boy is seducing the priest. But it's a relationship that's also heterosexual in nature. And historically, sexual relationships between men and boys have not been thought of as crimes. So I don't know if he's going back to, like, ancient Greece or Rome and pederasty. Is that how you say it? You know, you'd hear about, like, the old philosophers or something like that taking a young boy, kind of a student or apprentice, literally and figuratively under their wing. Or not that philosophers had wings, but you know what I mean. This is weird stuff. But I guess at the end, there was an update to the story, and he did apologize, in fairness to him. And this is Groeschel's words. "I apologize for my comments. I did not intend to blame the victim. A priest or anyone else who abuses a minor is always wrong and is always responsible. My mind and my way of expressing myself are not as clear as they used to be. I have spent my life trying to help others the best that I could. I deeply regret any harm I have caused to anyone." And that sounds pretty sincere. And when I think, when I used to watch him, he seemed like a pretty bright guy. And I know he went through some serious illnesses. I remember when he still looked fairly healthy and youthful for a older guy with a long white beard and all, very patrician-looking figure. And he was off the air for some kind of serious illness. When he came back, there was a noticeable difference. He looked very gone. He looked pallid, ill. So if you, given his age, he's in his late 70s, he's seen a lot of serious illness. Maybe he actually wasn't thinking straight, I don't know. But I think another disturbing aspect of the story, yeah, is that he received a doctorate in psychology from Columbia University in 1971. So I guess when first you hear those comments, you would say, well, guy sounds kind of ignorant. But he has a doctorate in psychology, so you'd think he'd have some kind of learned insight into the human mind and how people work. So this is weird stuff. But once again, I think the main reason I'm doing this story is, like I said, the goal of this show is to try to get at the truth about religion and its claims, and not necessarily to try to demonize religion. But I want to do this story on the one hand because it brought back memories to me of watching this guy in the middle of the night when I was a 20-something. And also, I mean, if it does any good, if this doing this story helps anyone, perhaps, or spreads awareness, that's obviously good too, goes without saying. But I think the most disturbing takeaway from this is, like I pointed to earlier, that kind of archaic thinking that somehow, you know, it's the victim that's responsible. It's the child that's responsible for the abuse he suffers at the hands of the adult. Just like, you know, those kind of ignorant people who say propagate that barbaric misogynistic idea that it's the woman who's responsible for the rape that she suffers at the hands of the rapist because maybe she was dressed too, quote-unquote, provocatively. And I think it should go without saying that, you know, a woman could walk down the street in a string bikini and a person still wouldn't have the right to sexually assault her. Just like, I don't care how troubled a kid was, it doesn't excuse a priest sexually abusing a child. And I find that hard to believe anyways. This is something that seems either intellectually dishonest or false to me, the idea that a good deal of these cases are children trying to seduce adults. I'm thinking back to when I was a kid. I don't know any kids that were trying to seduce adults, let alone a priest. I had a couple of good-looking female teachers, but I didn't have the cojones to try to seduce them. But I doubt that, you know, to me, I think these kids are victims, end of story. And even if there was some weird, anomalous case every once in a great while where some troubled kid was trying to seduce a grown-up, that's still no excuse. It just seems like Groeschel's trying to make excuses or pass the buck. But I'm getting a little creeped out with this story, so I'll put the kibosh on it. And there's the drinking word game of the week, kibosh. I think I first learned the word kibosh from watching Seinfeld. It might have been during one of the Joe Davola episodes. And there was another thing I wanted to talk about. Last night I was watching a rerun of a Mitt Romney documentary. I think it was on MSNBC. And you know, it was on the heels of the Republican convention that just ended, the two-night convention. I think it was only two nights. And it was a documentary that put Romney in a favorable light. And on a few occasions, they addressed his faith, you know, referring to him as a man of deep faith. And they had this really kind of touching, sappy music in the background while they talked about what a devout man he was. And philosophically, I've long found myself asking myself the question, why is faith considered inherently noble? You know, I mean, faith basically means believing without evidence or proof. And in most areas of life, if you take something on faith without evidence, you're likely to be called a sap or gullible. But in religion, oh, it becomes a virtuistic personality trait. And don't get me wrong, I think even I, you know, you hear on this show how often I'll come to the defense of religion in a way. I say that even though I'm not a believer, there's still a lot of things I admire about religion. I have respect for a lot of religious figures throughout the ages. But I mean, if you take a politician and, you know, you're covering his good and bad points and you say he's a person of faith, and that somehow you try to play that as being a virtue in itself. If his faith somehow compels him to do good acts or to contribute to charity, and that's one thing I can't take away from Romney, at least for those who belong to his community. You know, he does a lot of tithing, and he contributes to a lot of Mormon charity work and things like that. So if your faith somehow makes you more inclined to do good acts, I guess in that sense, perhaps you could argue that faith is a positive character trait. But then again, if you're essentially a good person, do you need faith in order to do good things? I don't think you do. But it's funny, you might even recall, if you just try to remember back to maybe conversations you've had or overheard in your life, where people will talk about someone as a person of faith and talk about how they have a deep faith, and it's meant as a positive. You know, you could have two people. You could have someone who's a non-believer, someone who's maybe an atheist or a secular humanist. Then you could have a religious person. The fact that one has faith and one doesn't necessarily tell you which one's the better individual. And you can be a person of faith and be a bigot. You can be a person of faith and be a swindler. Or thinking about the Westboro Baptist Church, the people that hold up the signs, God hates fags, and protest at the funerals of servicemen. They seem to have very deep faith, but I wouldn't call them good people. And so it just seemed weird to me. The idea that someone would believe in something without evidence is somehow a virtuous personality trait. And I've heard like Christian apologists will, when this comes up in debates with atheists, they'll say, well, you have faith in your wife, don't you? I remember someone asking Dawkins that. It might have been John Lennox, I think. And to me, that always seemed ridiculous, because you might have faith that your wife isn't going to cheat on you, or that she's going to show up at the door at 5 o'clock home from work or whatever. And part of how much faith you have in how she's likely to behave probably has to do with observation and past experience, the type of person you know her to be through interaction. And you know your wife exists. I mean, we know that. We don't know God exists. So I think it's a little erroneous. It's a little apples and oranges to try to compare the faith you might have in a spouse to the faith a person claims to have in a invisible deity. But anyway, so I did that somewhat disturbing Father Groeschel story. I waxed philosophical a little on the question of why is faith considered inherently noble, and I think I'll call it quits for this week. As always, this has been The Week in Doubt, and as always, once again, here we go. You can rate us on Podbean or iTunes, subscribe through Podbean or iTunes. You can subscribe and watch on YouTube, and if you want to send me a message or give me a like, you can go to the Week in Doubt Facebook page, and I promise I'll keep my eye out this time. And if you leave me a message, I'll be as quick as I can to get back to you. All right, thank you as always.